saying.
Blog Talk
down,
Radio.
Like,
yeah.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm better than nothing.
February the 13th.
December the 13th.
But, oh,
Friday.
February? See? It's the drugs I'm taking. You know, I had to go to the doctor. My sister rolled up. So, I'm on drugs now, yes. I am on drugs. And I'm having apple pie with the drugs. So, I am really, 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 I have to be checked today. Join the show to see if I'm one of the walking dead or I'm just talking, giving sign language like the interpreter. It means nothing. I see angels. That's what he said. He said he saw angels. And they knew he was having a schizophrenic attack. Well, my feet swelled up. How about that? And I felt like I was walking on cushions. I said, gee whiz, this floor of the kitchen, which is ceramic tile, it's awful slow. It was my feet. Anyway, we have a great interview with my pastor, Father Carl. It's a series of interviews we're doing with him. And we started doing these when the St. Francis was became the Pope of the Catholic Church. And now there are some nut jobs out there who are talking about him.
Yeah,
like they know.
If I not
yeah.
We mean the GOP.
The GOP, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck. So we're going to go right into that because it's a little long, but it is a great interview. We discuss all these things. And
can I
yes.
quote one of them? Ted Cruz, evangelical, which, you know, that in and of itself has a problem with Catholics.
Yes,
but anyway, Ted Cruz on the Pope said, he clearly doesn't understand the true meaning of Christianity. I'm not sure what kind of socialist upbringing he had. The true Christian principles are found in taking from the poor, not giving to them.
Taking from the poor?
That's the secret. how will the poor ever better themselves if we don't make them work for it at a very low-paying wage? We can't continue to let Obamacare corrupt the Pope, which is
currently
there.
Is that what he said?
Yes.
Well, now, so he called him a socialist, Glenn Beck called him a communist, and Rush Limbaugh called him a Marxist.
Yes. It is, you know, again, it's like when Obama was elected. They kind of run out of terms sometimes. You know, it's the fascist, communist, Marxist, right. Socialist, evil, devil,
well,
whatever.
Let's go into this, and you'll hear. This is Father Powell, Lady Constellation Catholic Church in Charlotte, North Carolina.
This is the last word. It is December 13, 2013. And I'm Michael Lawson. I'm here with Father Call, my pastor, at Our Lady Constellation in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we said that we were going to come back when Pope Francis was fully in control and rolling along, mm-hmm. and he is rolling.
Yes, he is, Michael. He is moving along.
He has said some things that have been greeted with by a lot of people as long overdue, and some who are saying that he hasn't written it himself. We'll get into those people a little bit, but on September 19th this year, that's about 6 months after he was in office, he had some remarks that the church had been obsessed with abortion, gay marriage, contraception, and that he had chosen not to talk about these issues despite recriminations from his critics. That in a statement, and it says here in this article by Laurie Goodstein, that and he's criticized the church for putting dogma before love and for polarizing moral doctrines over serving the poor and the marginalized. He says that the article also has his vision as an inclusive home for all, which has been a striking contrast to previous doctrine defenders who envisioned a smaller spiritual church. Now, St. Peter, when he first started, when he got his orders from Christ said, go out and get people. He didn't say, I just get a couple of close friends, you know, like maybe 12 more disciples, and you'll have a great church. I mean, wasn't the idea of getting people involved, spreading the word, the good news?
Exactly, Michael, it is. To go out and get people, no matter who we are, where we're from, to reach out to us. And then we in turn respond to Christ, hopefully. And then over time, with help, we conform our lives to them. Easy to make, it's not going to be instantaneous. There's no such thing as instant change. You can't turn an ocean liner on a dime, and even people's lives. It takes a while for us to begin disciplining ourselves according to his teaching.
And, you know, it's not like, as you said, you can't turn things on a dime.
Yeah.
And there are people who have drifted away, and those people, you just can't let them go. I mean, you know, because, you know, for one reason or another, some people have drifted out of, you know, the church and have just gone about their business because they feel they're involved with other things that are taking up more time. And St. Francis told the interviewer, he's a fellow Jesuit, and we'll talk about the Jesuits too, he says, this is not necessarily to talk about these issues all the time. He was talking about abortion and gay marriage and contraception and whatnot. He said that the church's pastoral ministry cannot be obsessed with the transmission of a disjointed multitude of doctrines to be imposed instantaneously. So, that's exactly what you said. We can't turn things on a dime. So we have to find a new balance to poke into you. Otherwise, even the moral edifice of the church is likely to fall like a house of cards, losing the freshness and fragrance of the gospel.
You know, I read an article some weeks back, or maybe a month now, in Commonweal Magazine, which I highly recommend to your listeners.
Commonweal?
Commonweal Magazine. And this particular article was beautifully put together. I have to paraphrase this now. I wasn't prepared to talk about the article. This is the point that came up, that many in the church want the smaller, leaner, whatever institution, leaner, shall we say. And if I'm positioned here as a pastor, where are my people? And another way to put it also, if I made my Aquinas article, if I'm selling a brand of toothpaste, and 12 million people stop buying my toothpaste, I want to know why they stopped buying the toothpaste, and what I can do to get into music again. Too many of our church leaders, I don't care, even laity, not just clergy, many times laity, take a position, well, they're just going to fall off anyhow. That's the wrong kind of attitude. That's not charitable. So 12 million people in the past 2 years have fallen away from the church. Either gone elsewhere, or worse, stopped going anywhere at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why? And I don't think, I should say, some have more leadership in the hierarchy, and many clergy and many laity are trying to find out why people have stopped. And that's what we need to do. If people aren't using the product, we've got to find out why. We're doing something. I will say this. Something's gone wrong somewhere. Now, the teaching of the church, the basic teaching, you better read Exodus, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments, Matthew 25, love your neighbor as yourself, take care of your neighbor. Those are the basic minimal standards for really any Catholic of faith, and most any person of faith or good moral persuasion, to really see what they can do in the world in support of one another, in solidarity, and have respect for other people. And why are we losing people?
Well, you know, and what you not to forget what you were talking about, because we're going to come back to that. Because what you hit on a very, very important. That's the dogma of the church. What you're saying, you know, about the poor and about neglecting them. I mean, we need to. That's the doctrine. I mean, it's not about pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. It's not about that. The Pope also in the said that we're not changing the doctrine or policies of the church.
He said
that these are the things that some people have forgotten. And where it was said, or who said it, but is it about going through the eye of a needle?
Yeah.
Rich man has a less of a chance of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you say the rich man, that doesn't mean every rich man, but because you're rich, there are a lot of things that you do for other people that you should do as part of the moral structure. To see a Father Spandaro, I think his name is, he's the one that conducted the Jesuit, he's the one that conducted the interview with the Pope. And the Pope said, he's in his guest house, that's where he's living. He's not living in the huge apartment that he has. He's living in the guest house, a Spartan guest house at that, because I believe he took out some of the furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And has less than a lot of other people. He says that he says where Francis said that he has chosen to live like this because it is less isolated. It's less isolated from the people. He says, "I cannot live without people." Francis told Father Spandaro. His interview kept under wraps for weeks by the Jesuits was released simultaneously. And the Jesuit, 16 Jesuit journalists around the world were at the interview. Francis' personal interviews was reviewed by the Italian transcript. When it was reviewed by the Italian transcript, it was translated by a team of team into English, said Father James Martin, the editor of the magazine. So we have great people, said Father Spandaro, in a phone call interview from his office provided by the Italian journalists. There's a big vision, not a big shift. His vision is to see the church in the middle of the persons who need to be healed. It is in the middle of the world.
Yes, very much so.
The Pope's words were likely to have a repercussions in the church, whose bishops and priests in many countries, including the United States, have often seemed to make combating abortion, gay marriage, and contraception their top policy. Okay, so what happened was that now Father is 76, and he was also, and I think the last time we were here, we talked about that he was a bouncer at one time.
Oh, really?
Yes, he was a bouncer in Brazil. So, you know, if he was a bouncer, well, as a Jesuit, that might fit a Jesuit. That might fit a Jesuit.
I can see that. I've met a few in my life.
So there's a lot of things that we still don't know about Father Francis. Let's see, anything he ever said. He said, a person once asked me, he said, in a provocative manner, if I approved of homosexuality. He told Father, he told the young man, he says, I reply with another question. Tell me, when God looks at a gay person, does he endorse the existence of this person who, with love, or reject and condemn this person? We must always consider the person. So, a lot of people here in this country are not really going to go along with what he's saying, or that they can't really get themselves to say that because of all the things that they said along the way. So now a lot of things that they were saying before, they might have to slightly change, but that's going to make them look very bad in a lot of people's eyes. Especially now with Pope Francis, who has change the facade of what we consider a Pope should be. Now, I know that he has recently talked about money and how that is affecting the people in the world, and how he sees the world as ignoring those that have left. He said, we can only praise the steps being taken to improve people's welfare in areas such as healthcare, education, and communication. At the same time, we have to remember that the majority of our contemporaries are barely living from day to day with dire consequences. Now, we see that everywhere. When you do your visitations to different hospitals and visit people, I'm sure you see this quite often.
I do at times see people. How can I say on this? I'll use the word downside of life. On that part of life, and it can't change the situation of everybody. What a person can do is show respect for the person, provide some sense of encouragement, some hope, and not look down on them because of the condition of the situation in which they are living.
But we have people today that say, well, it's your fault you're living like that.
It's possible some people choose to live the way they do. Yeah, some people. But a lot of folks. they don't want to. They want to aspire to something greater than what they have, more than what they have. They want a shop, a place to live with a roof over their head, a good floor underneath, clothes on their back, and food on the table. I didn't say they hooked a hotel. It's a difference. But they have the basic necessities and work for them. Because
yeah.
in work, and this is what our concept comes to us from our church teachings, from the work we perform, I'm paraphrasing now,
mm-hmm.
from the work we perform, we find our sense of worth and value.
Right.
Not the totality of who we are, but we have a sense of giving to the community and receiving something back. I work for the boss. I produce something the boss is pleased with most of the time, I hope. And in return, it's for remuneration. I get paid for what I perform, or give, or maybe in the case may have been now over the years, and there's satisfaction in that. Performing the work and getting something in return. And that's as old as human beings. You can find it written in clay tablets in Mesopotamia. People, from the oldest written documents we have, go back to Mesopotamia, written on clay tablets. And what was it about? Business.
And
people working, people paying their bills, and people receiving something in return.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old written word.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes way back to who we are as people.
I'm going to read you a couple of things here that I wanted to give you. I want you to give me your comments. Here's some of the things that the Pope Francis has just said. He said, he's talking about the failure of traditional economic dogmas. He said that some people continue to defend trickle-down theories which assume that economic growth encouraged by a free market will eventually succeed in bringing about greater justice and inclusiveness in the world. This opinion, which has never been confirmed by the facts, expressed a crude and naive trust in the goodness of those wielding economic power and in the workings of the prevailing economic system. Meanwhile, the excluded are still waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Then, what do you think? Saying once he mentions the word trickle down, every single conservative in the world is going to think he's talking about them.
If the shoe fits, Michael, wear it.
But here we are. We're waiting for people to give a handout. What we have now, I had a person on my show call me up. He said, well, if they can't find work where they live, they need to move. He said, there's plenty of work out in Wyoming and in Texas and Georgia. Well, you know, yeah, they've been hiring people down there, but it's all part-time and low-wage jobs.
Okay.
And first of all, how can someone move when they don't have the money to live where they're at? How are they going to get the money to move? I mean, it's free. No one's going to, I mean, I'm sure McDonald's is not going to pay you to move to Texas. So some of the things that these people say just don't make any common sense. He also said that while the earnings of the minority are growing exponentially, so too is the gap spreading the majority from the prosperity enjoyed by those happy few. What do you think about that?
A few years ago,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking of Galena, Illinois. I got my story right. Galena, Illinois. In the Maytag city. Maytag. My grandma had a Maytag.
Mm.
It never died. My mother had a Maytag. It never died. She had to throw it out.
Because it's a Maytag repairman, it says, I don't have any work.
And I think early on that was probably true. That was my experience looking at the family. Maytag left Galena to set its operations south of the border.
Mm.
Now, on the books, Maytag is prosperous.
Right.
On Wall Street, you know, the circle, all that shows Maytag is still prosperous, but the whole operation has relocated. Now, that's capital moving.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's part of capitalism.
Mm.
But there's another part of capital. What about the human capital? Where is that at this point? And very often we tend to forget the human capital involved, the human resources, the people who perform the work.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's, I'm sure, just fit into making plans, but sometimes I really question it.
Well, just led right into my next quote from Pope Francis. He says, "We have created new idols, the worship of the ancient golden calf." Exodus 32:1-35 has returned in a new and ruthless guise in the idolatry of money and the dictatorship of an impersonal economy lacking of truly human purpose.
I preached about this before, Michael, but you show me your checkbook. Show me the check stubs,
mm-hmm.
the check you've written, and I'll point to your God.
Mm-hmm.
Your God's record is in that checkbook right there,
mm-hmm.
whether it's personal or whether it's business or whatever. Our God can be found somewhere. And I mean God with a small g. Taking God. It's there.
Yeah.
And we have to be careful. I mean, it's okay to take care of our needs. It's okay to be prudent and discreet with discreet about how we spend our money, discretion, and how we invest ourselves, but always realizing there is someone else in the world we must be concerned for.
Mm.
Maybe a neighbor next door. It could be that child in Pakistan who is stitching the soccer ball that somebody's child in South Charlotte is going to be kicking this afternoon after leaving their private school.
Mm-hmm.
Same age boy is kicking the soccer ball after being driven by his mother or nanny.
Mm-hmm.
Another boy the same age has made the soccer ball
mm-hmm.
by hand
mm-hmm.
in unhelpful conditions.
Right.
Nothing wrong in making a soccer ball. Nothing wrong in trade and values. In trading, that's
mm-hmm.
important. But the child should be in school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And working conditions should be safe for him. And mostly in third world countries. As we learned from the collapse of the factories in India,
mm-hmm. right.
they are not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the pursuit of the false god.
Pope Francis also says, it is evident that the unbridled consumption combined with the inequities proved doubly damaging to the social fabric. And it's true.
And we find ourselves where a very part of being a community of city, I'm saying here in Charlotte, like
yeah, right.
in Charlotte, we see how we interact with one another and how our actions take place, that it does erode into who we are. It does, it can and does have a corrosive effect. And an astute person, especially a person of faith or high moral conviction, should be tuned in to the corrosive effect. If it isn't, money is not an evil itself. It's the medium of exchange. It is the preoccupation with the consumption and acquisition that the problem lies.
And you know, that's so true. I remember growing up, I didn't think about it growing up, but my brother and I had a lot more than most of the kids that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't rich. I mean, but we had a house, we had a backyard, we had, went to private school, Catholic school. I don't remember ever in my entire life I remember we had to make out a Christmas list every year. You got to make out, what do you want for Christmas? You got to tell Santa Claus that he might bring to you if you're good. And we had to make, we used to write out 25, 30 things. And we used to get 20 of the things. We used to get 20 of them. But I remember every year, my mother would say to us, you have to take two toys each, you and your brother, and put them and wrap them and give them to There was some kids, a family, an Indian family, American Indian family, that lived up on the third floor. We were in the second floor. And this is when they first opened up these projects in the club I was doing when we were having lunch. And there was seven people in their family.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother was living there, and the father was either killed in the service or he was killed sometime, so the mother was bringing him up. And they said they were just trying to stay in the apartment because they didn't have enough money, so they were a lot of things they didn't have. We used to give them our clothing, and we had to give them toys. And every Christmas we had to give them toys. They had to give us four toys between us, sometimes five toys. And we gave it up. We gave up toys. And I said, why did I get my toys? He said, well, you're not playing with them. You used to play with them, but you play with them all year, maybe half a year, and then you haven't looked at it again. Says, you're in good shape. Yeah, so we had to give them away. And I really didn't really understand that, growing up as much as, until I got a little older, and then I realized why. Because some people just don't have what you have, and it's not that you're giving up something that you worked for as a kid. We didn't work for it. I went to school, if that's considered a job, but my mother and father worked for it, and they paid for it. So, but they were trying to instill in us that other people don't have what you have, and you don't have what other people have. So, but there needs to be some sort of way that you can help others who don't have as much as you have. And it doesn't matter how little you have. If you have more than someone else, maybe you should just try to give them a little something. It doesn't matter, because it's, first of all, that's what Christ said. You help your neighbor. And one of the things that Pope Francis also said, he said, just as the commandment, thou shalt not kill, sets a clear limit in order to safeguard the value of human life, today we also have to say, thou shalt not to an economy of exclusion and inequity such as economy kills. And he's absolutely right. They thou shalt not kill, but if you're not helping your neighbor, or you're not helping people who need help in an economy where people don't have things, it's the same thing as thou shalt not kill. There are a lot of organizations that are around helping people who have less than you, and every day you read about these kids in different parts of the world that don't have anything. When I was over there in Asia, I could see that. It was mind-boggling, but most of the people here, and since we're not having as many people, we don't have people in volunteer for the military anymore. Say a lot of people don't have the access to go see what other people are like, even in their own country. So, and we don't have people with money going in the military anymore. They don't go in the military. That's for those other people.
I hear you, yes.
That's for those other people. That's not for us. Because we have what we have, and we need to keep it. But they don't realize that if it wasn't for those people in the military, they wouldn't have it. And we treat our military so bad today. They're treated like dirt. They are. They're not dead. They have, I believe it's 9% of the military right now is on food stamps. 9%. That means we have people in the military who are on food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
On the SNAP program. Now that's going to be a disgrace. How can we have people who are defending this country on food stamps? And that's all right with these people. because the people who are making the judgments on it have never been in the military themselves and never had to worry about that program of food stamps. I mean, living on $187 a week.
Mm-hmm.
How can you live on $187 a week and then they also want to cut that? You know, so it's completely mind-boggling how people will I guess disparage and not think about the fellow man. And I think this is what Pope Francis wants to get back to. Would you say a little bit about that?
We spoke over lunch today,
mm-hmm.
and I shared with you and Joanne Malone about the editorial cartoon in last Saturday's Charlotte Observer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a series of editorial cartoons on the page, and I love the Saturday morning paper. Whether it's the buzz of the day, it was the comedian's comments on the cartoon, they speak of the condition today. Whether we can laugh at it or cry at it or become upset about it. And I think it's the last editorial cartoon at the bottom of the column. And it showed a caricature of Pope Francis, figure who it was, and he's holding a piece of paper in his hand, like a little sheet of paper. And on the sheet of paper, I have to think about, may have said, you know, hope, love, charity, something along those lines. And opposite him is the profile of someone saying to him, I don't know the exact words, but I'll paraphrase this, here is the caricature of the Pope, Michael, holding papers that say faith, hope, and charity, in those terms, and the other person is commenting those are the same ridiculous words that Jesus used. He's saying the same thing that Jesus did. Look what happened to him. And what Francis is doing is taking the words of Christ, looking at the gospel,
mm-hmm.
repeating those words today, 2,000 years later, in a different world than 20 centuries ago. 20 centuries ago, you're either a slave or you're free.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
You're no in between.
Or in between. Or a patrician, or a plebeian, or a slave. And that was it. That was the system. We're different today. We're different economically.
But it seems like they want to bring it back to that, though. It seems like that they want to get it back to that. Where you have nothing or you have everything.
Well, yeah, that's true. Some people do have everything. And some have nothing at all.
Well, it shows us that from the 1950s, the average person working has really, I think it's gone up 7% increase to 10% increase in salary. And those making millions, it's gone up 200%. So the fair equity of growth between the haves and have-nots has gotten wider. So the wider the width, the more the have-nots have not, and the more the haves have. So we're getting back to where there is no medium ground, where there is no middle class. So we're getting back to that system you just talking about.
I've heard terms used like the shrinking middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say you're...
It's gone.
I think it's there. It is definitely... Well, we knew it's middle class. I grew up in that. You grew up in
yeah.
And we grew into...
Right.
We grew into this middle class.
Right.
And we're finding out that in it, it's been eroded.
Yes.
It's been diminished. And... That's where we are at right now.
But always that growing into a middle class because there is no more middle class. We used to be able to grow into it because you started out. We were talking about over lunch about what it costs for have a life insurance policy. I remember paying 25 cents, 50 cents, 30 cents, my mother and father, every week to the insurance man when he came by. I mean, today... You can't pay 25 cents. You can't pay 50 cents a week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing is that those people that had insurance, well, they didn't need $200,000 of insurance back then. only the Macy's people, the president of Macy's, and the rich had $200,000 worth of life insurance. But today, you can't be buried. It costs $10,000 for a funeral. $7,000 to $10,000 for a funeral today.
That's the least.
That's the least. So, you know, and we're talking about just the casket. We're talking about the funeral. We're talking about just the casket. So, you know, I believe that Pope Francis, with his statements on the economy, he says there's no to the economy of exclusion. We are excluding people who before would not have been excluded. So how do we get back to that? Now I'm going to change it over to the church. Was the church excluding people? Because you said something about that when you first started talking about the exclusion, why we were losing people. Was it the way the church has been conducting business, do you think?
I use business. I don't necessarily mean in brick and mortar business.
No, right.
In its operations,
right.
It's functioning. I think that very often the church is misunderstood sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes teachers' responsibility, pastors and hierarchy, sometimes run off half cocked.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes ill-informed in certain areas. And you're teaching today the demographic of Catholics today is not what it was when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
The Catholics 50 years ago, my grandparents, they came from overseas, Muslims. Different parts of the world came from overseas. They weren't that educated. They were. They learned only enough that they could read, write, add and subtract, and be able to conduct business or work with somebody.
Well, they knew that already, but they didn't have to do it in English.
And they, that's right. They had that impediment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their grandchildren now, and great-grandchildren, going to big universities. Their positions of importance and authority. They're educated now. And very often, some people think, and I mean some people do, they're still talking to people today as if they were still peasants.
Yeah.
And they're not. People are educated. Today, people in the pews are well educated. And they discern and they question. They raise issues. They raise their hands, so it's not just a math on a Sunday.
Right, yeah.
But they challenge ideas and concepts. And they know people study. And they understand. And you have someone coming in making some comments that don't bear out. I'll give you an example. And I'll stake my job on this. But I've heard this, that for example, people's sexual orientation is by nurture,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to nature.
Mm-hmm.
And having been the pastor now over 30 years, and working with people, no one would choose to be the kind of person to be persecuted and injured.
Why?
Why would someone want to be in a position of being punched in the eye all the time?
Right.
A person wouldn't do that.
No.
And I'm listening to people and talking with them. It's a matter of how the sperm fertilizes the egg. What happens in the mixing of the genes and the genomes, the person is either going to be straight or they're going to be gay. It's an act of God. God creates that gay person
mm-hmm.
as a straight person, and God cannot make a mistake.
Well, that's, you know, he says, well, and if that's the case, why did he let there be a Hitler? Why would he let there be a Mao? Why would he let there be these people that are serial killers? Why? Because that is, he don't make a mistake. I mean, you know, it's just like saying, you have to have day to show how good It is versus night.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, right. Exactly. I hear you. Yes. Yes.
If you only saw night, or only saw evil, mm-hmm. you would never know what good and day is like.
That's right. So yes, I hear you. Yes.
So, if we had, there's always something that has to represent the opposite. So you can tell the difference. If you, and it's just like the kids who grew up in lots of big bad circumstance with their parents beating them all the time. More than likely, a lot of them grow up and do the same thing that they did. So, I mean, this is my opinion that you can't have one without the other. Can't have the rain without the sunshine. Can't have the night without the day. Mm-hmm. This is just like you said. No one would want to choose that life and be picked on and beat up and tormented for being that way. It is just it, and that's an explanation that I have not heard from these people that say that's true. They can't give you an explanation. They can't say, "Well, let me tell you why a person would want to get beat up." That's nonsense. Simply nonsense. So, and you're actually right. The Pope also says the culture, when he's talking about the marketplace now, again, but in this article, he talks about, I mean, he gives a full, as a matter of fact, I will put this on the website. This is by Joe Weinstein, November 26, 2013. And he talks about the Pope just published one of the most powerful critiques of modern capitalism that you will ever read. And in this, he talks about the idolatry of money. He says the worldwide critics affecting finance and economy lay bare their imbalance and, above all, their lack of real concern for human beings. Man is reduced to one of his needs alone, consumption. And he also says that the culture of prosperity deadens us. We're thrilled if the market offers us something new to purchase. And in the meantime, all of these lives stun for a lack of opportunity, seen as a mere spectacle. They fail to move us. So he talks about how the economic system that we live in has changed the way we feel about our fellow man and what we need to do to help those around us who don't have, not what we have, but don't have the means to be just to support their own self-esteem. That they don't, the Pope is not saying that they need what you have. Mm-hmm. And as Rush Limbaugh says, which I'll play that on the show, what he said, that the Pope is a mockery and that somebody else is writing this for him. I mean, why would he have to have someone write this for him? Is just, but the people that listen to Rush are not thinking people anyway, because they all say ditto. So therefore, if they're saying ditto, that means they're not thinking for themselves. They're not adding anything to any content to the conversation. It's just ditto what you said before. I agree 100%. But there's nothing else I can add to it because I don't know anything else. He's saying he's on the wrong side of capitalism because he's now a Marxist and has Marxist writing for him. He was down in Brazil before. A heck of a long time. He fought those communists down there. He fought. This priest fought them. So when he became the Pope, I don't think he's going to change his colors and be different when he becomes the head of the church. Now there's a new thing that just came out, which I'm sure that's going to set these people really off the deep end about Pope Francis. He's now Time Magazine's Man of the Year. What do you think of that?
He's got a good PR man.
Well, Bert says he's got people writing for him.
Well, if I had his budget, I'd have people writing for me, too. It's me and that computer right now, and Joanne proof what I write. If I had a budget, I could tell people my thinking, my thoughts, and they get the work, shorthand, longhand, and as a printed document. That's what comes with the position of some administrative privilege. With the guy in charge, the chief executive, you've got a few people around you to do the typing for you, the word processing. So, yes, I can understand that. And I do know, after going, I had a chance to read the whole document that he put out. My computer's down on my internet connection. But I've caught bits and strips in various portions of what I've read, is that in the past, many popes have let their curial departments write, and they'll sign on the dotted line.
Mm-hmm.
He has rejected that.
Mm.
This is what he wants to say. Now, granted, we read what is being written,
mm-hmm.
and edit it, and put it as what he wants to say. It's like doing my homework, doing my research. When I preach, I do homework, I do my research, I say the word. I have to do homework first.
Mm-hmm.
He does his homework. And he produces what he wants to say. Now, I'm surprised to hear it said that he's a Marxist, because it was during the time when John Paul II was Pope, and it was a time when I believe it was President Reagan was in the White House, and he had a number of people in his administrative cabinet that were Catholic. And I remember John Paul came out with the document he was teaching on economics. And it was very much land-based, not just communism, but land-based is capitalism. Because it's extremes of both. It's extremes of both.
Mm.
You end up with oppression. It's extremes. Both. It's oppression. Or slavery. How you want to measure it. And here we had a few members of the cabinet that were Catholic saying, well, that Pope isn't what I'm talking about. And one of the people speaking was Alexander Haig.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm thinking, these guys don't know what they're talking about. They cannot read, their knowledge of faith isn't deep enough to really see what is being said. And I even say even right now, well, yeah, in theory, capitalism is the best thing to come along since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a devout capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
I have a savings account. My retirement is in the stock market like many other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I put my money with the right kind of financial advice so that the day comes I can retire. Not have to work. I want to work, but not have to work every day. That's capitalism. Pure, plain, and simple. But where is it that I have responsibility as an investor how my money is being used? Case in point. Way back. Polaroid. Polaroid produced a camera that could be take an instant picture and make a photo ID with.
Mm.
Was used in North Carolina to make driver's licenses.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that when I first was in North Carolina. That same kind of equipment was sold to South Africa
mm-hmm.
to make photo IDs of the black African people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what happened is that there were a number of people in this country who got on Polaroid's case for selling that equipment that was enslaving. We can call it, we can say enslaving,
that's
right. It's slavery, it's right. Enslaving mm-hmm. the black population of the nation of South Africa for selling that equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to do. If we truly believe our people of faith, and we truly allow our money to be used, which is good for our benefit, how it is being used, and the use of our money, in that case, many religious orders had their monies invested, of course, to produce income for the orders, for their retirement, whatever. They use in Polaroid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to keep eyes open. I know, and I think of my saying this, I've got a, oh gosh, it was for the investors in one of the funds that I have, and it was should environmental concerns be on the table when the board of directors meets? Well, I got this questionnaire from this company I bank with, I invest with, and I checked off the box. Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Well, some months later, the board of directors meeting, or a stockholders meeting, I should say, and what do you think was on that agenda? Environmental issues mm-hmm. and concerns. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
That was environment. I realize that.
Right.
Let's keep our eyes open for that.
Mm-hmm.
How we can make an effect, be effective in the world. So there's environmental issues. This is what amazes me that some people on the right, and I'm making a statement, Michael, I'm going up on a limb, how they can deny science.
No. I'll make the statement of that.
That if global warming is going to cause people living in the southern, in the Pacific Islands to lose their homes as the oceans rise, if human action has caused that,
mm-hmm.
if it has, then we are partially responsible for them losing their homes.
Okay.
I'm not saying it is, because we are on the other swing of the last ice age. I realize that. Ice age, the end of the last ice age, could be the beginning of the next one. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We're moving in that direction. Another 15,000 years, it'll be an ice shelf a mile high going through Richmond, Virginia. Who knows what the future has? But it could happen. That's 15,000 years from now. But what am I doing today that's going to affect somebody else in another part of the world? I can't poo-poo that.
Yeah.
I can't do that. I cannot. If my life, if my summer air conditioning, if my Buick, you catch my drift,
mm-hmm.
if my heating in the winter keeps me warm, is putting stuff in the air, it causes the atmosphere to temperature to rise, polar ice caps, no glaciers, the glaciers to melt, and the sea rises, I'm responsible for that.
Well, anyway, see, this is like one and one is two. We have these conservatives. You got conservative. You got this one guy, Braun, I believe his name is. He is the head of the Committee on Science and Technology. This man is a doctor. And he said I have the tape where he says that everything I learned was an absolute lie about science. So this man is a doctor. Why would you go back to him? Why would you go back to him? This man saying that there's no such thing. Now, I work in the Weather Service for 25 years. And I want to tell you that, Rush comes on the show all the time and says, look, how's this global warming when we have all this snow? Well, that's why you're having this snow, stupid. I mean, because global warming will set up water vapors in the air, it gets colder, and therefore you have more snow, more severe snow. Not more snow. Instead of a light snowstorm, you'll have a heavy snowstorm. Instead of mild temperatures, you'll have hot temperatures. So, and then, you have life cycles on this planet. Because like you say, it's 15,000 years, 10,000 years. But if you contribute to changing those life cycles or making them more severe, that's the problem.
Yes. You know, I hear about that. People say there's no warming cycle in the weather. My training's in geography. Even though I have my paper that says I'm Master in Divinity and Theology, my discipline is geography.
Oh, people don't even know what geography is. You got people here who couldn't tell you where they live. They couldn't tell you how to get there. We're in North Carolina? Gee.
Where's that?
Who's that? They couldn't find it on the map.
I'm a geographer.
They don't teach that anymore. They don't teach geography anymore.
Yeah. I'm a geographer by training, okay? That's my early discipline.
Right.
I still reflect on it, and I still use what I learned today.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at pictures and photographs. You did this years ago.
Absolutely.
40 years ago.
Yeah.
Glacier Park. Glaciers.
Did it in high school.
They're not there anymore, the glaciers.
That's right. Where'd they go?
Where'd the glaciers go? Well, they melted.
That's right.
That's because the temperature has increased.
That's right.
We talked about this over 40 years ago when I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
The glaciers are melting. There's retreating in the glaciers. That means there's more liquid now in the oceans.
There's only evaporation to the air.
Evaporation to the air, it comes down as precipitation someplace. If it's cold enough, it comes down as snow.
That's right.
So, other than simple scientific, go for hiking Glacier Park. It's not there anymore. Well, mm-hmm. They're not there anymore.
They've receded.
They've receded tremendously. Mm-hmm. And that's just, pardon this pun, that's the tip of the iceberg.
That's right.
There's more to it than that, much more.
Absolutely right.
So, people say they discount what they've learned in science. Some of it is as simple as taking a train ride to Montana and looking at the park and realizing where have all the ice gone.
You can go as far as the Civil War. I mean, you remember all the snow you had in Virginia and Pennsylvania and hey, you don't get that much snow anymore. I don't remember the last time that snowed here. What was it, a couple years ago? But we had the snow, it was very severe.
Yeah.
And North Carolina, well, salt, if you have snow in salt, you know, it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it was bad the last time we had snow here.
Yeah.
I mean, but 2 or 4 days, they couldn't do nothing here. You know, it's not like having snow in New York City. When you walk around, you conduct business as normal, snow up to your knees.
Yeah.
You know, but the snow had changed where it's falling. And where it's not falling, it's falling now, and it's falling more severe than it ever did. But what I wanted to also, before we leave, is tell us about two things. One about the what you thought about Pope Francis as the Time Magazine man he is.
Oh, yes.
So what do you think about how that's going to be received?
I think some of us will accept it as a step, a positive reflection. He has made a kind of an impact, but the impact is on a secular institution.
Mm.
This is not a church publication. This is not a church organ.
Mm-hmm.
This is hardcore business.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people, new people, these are reporters, these are people who read, who study, who provide information, whose job is to provide truth when they print the word, and they make a man of the year. Now, I think it's fantastic. He has come on in such a short time and has made comments, and I think he needs to be listened to. He's a religious leader for us Catholics, 1 billion strong, and he has the bully pulpit, so to speak, which is good. He's a man of conscience, and many people will, well, I don't believe that in person's faith. What the man says makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to Billy Graham preach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe as Billy Graham does, but darn it, he's got a good message.
Mm-hmm.
Let me listen to what the man has to say. And how that applies to my life.
Mm-hmm.
It will change my relationship, it will improve my relationship with the Lord. It will stop me from being a person of faith in my own church, but as a man with a positive message.
Mm-hmm.
And people in those positions that could be listened to. I'm talking about, you know, like Billy Graham and Francis. But he has the opportunity to teach us. He words for all. Even a person who's not a Christian is people of faith and moral conviction.
And why would you be afraid of someone to listen to someone? Just like they're trying to make a major thing about Obama shaking hands with Castro, the Castro brother, at the Mandela's funeral. John McCain said he should have never shaken his hand and walked just by him. He should have, and then we got the other people saying he had no right, representative, Republican representative from Florida, he was holding up, John Kerry, Secretary Kennedy, at a congressional hearing yesterday. She was holding up pictures of him shaking hands with the Castro brother, who's now the president of Cuba, and she said, this is a disgrace. He's disgraced the country. Well, you know, I don't understand that when these people are saying that, and they didn't say anything when both Bushes were holding the hand of the Saudi Arabian king and the Saudi Arabian king's father, holding his hand, helping him walk. Or John McCain, when he shook hands with Muammar Gaddafi and the other guy, Saddam Hussein, Don Lunsfeld shook hands with Muammar Gaddafi. That was all right. They could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the hypocrisy is just beyond belief. It's just beyond belief. So there's nothing that Obama could do ever that would make them say, oh, that was a good idea. No. And it's just like Rush Limbaugh criticizing Pope Francis as being the a Marxist now. I mean, you know, how far can he go when one of the television representatives from MSNBC, Martin Bashir, criticized Sarah Palin? He could not do that. But Rush Limbaugh could criticize the Pope by saying he's a Marxist, and it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's how we look at who we are, and most people probably don't even know who listen to Rush and the listen to Fox might not even know who the Pope is, but they certainly know who the president is, and their side of the aisle doesn't like them at all. It wouldn't matter. Another thing I wanted to get into before you leave here is, how are you feeling? Tell us.
Well, right now, at the moment I feel very fine. Another way I'm still dealing right now might be that personal question. I'm still dealing with whatever condition is causing my double vision. I have difficulty in focusing and I see things in double. And following my doctor's advice, I'm not driving my car.
Mm-hmm.
I can still work. The sad part of the situation is
still
work.
I mean, if I
couldn't... You can't
get a note saying, I got to stay home today.
I have to come into work, Michael. I can still see the keyboard and the computer screen. Anything beyond that is double. So I got to be here.
Sure.
But don't drive. Keep busy. Keep my work up. I can do that. And I'm doing it. And it's just frustrating. I see some very fine professional people here in the city, and they're working on it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like many people in the parish have told me, they're praying for me, and they say this soon will pass. And I believe it will.
This soon will pass. It's like a regular, a European, what do you call, capitalist. From the 1930s.
Oh, yeah. I thought of myself as a pirate, model, but I accept that, too. They were pirates all
the time. They were
in expensive dinner suits.
Yes, that's right. I'll go. You only need the ascot and the pipe.
Oh, I had that.
Okay, so, we need to see the article isn't out yet in time. I think it's going to be coming out this weekend.
Good.
So, we got to do a review of that, and... we'll come back and critique that.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me. And once I make me the phone call,
send
a
phone.
At Our Lady of Consolation. Catholic Church in Charlotte,
North Carolina.
And this is Michael Lloyd.
This is Michael Lloyd.
Well, that was a little long, but I tell you what, we were talking about the,
but it's this thing because...
The clown show.
It is the season of Christmas.
To be jolly.
If we listen to the corporations around here, we should have been celebrating this since before Halloween, you know, because they've been trying desperately to get into the stores and play the music. But
uh-huh,
anyway,
uh-huh.
It is that season, and then on top of that, we've had this rather pathetic example from the right wing of attacking the Pope and everything for daring to want to feed the poor.
Unbelievable. So, what's that Ted Cruz said about, you read that before something when we were off the air about...
He knows nothing about Christianity.
Yeah. The Pope knows nothing about Christianity.
Yeah, because the poor, we're not supposed to help the poor.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to give to the poor.
To teach them how to live. Right.
I think the poor... pretty much know how to fend for themselves.
You think?
You see, their survival skills are pretty magnetic.
Yeah,
the point is that Stephen Covington has been having a field day, so this was a really great time to go back and interview the father there and see what he had to say about, because, you know, they've been just bashing on the Pope for 2 weeks now, ever since he dared to question the infallibility of the Great Dollar Bill.
Well, also the position that he that the who am I to judge whose preference you are?
And I think actually you had it right there, but before you paused mid-sentence to finish what he asked, I think the real point is in what, you know, it says in the Bible, who are you to judge? It says directly, judge not.
Was that the head of the Republican Party? Was somebody said that, or was that Glenn Beck?
Well, that's the thing that...
No, I guess that was God that said that.
And that's the thing that crushed me with the aggrandizement and the know everythingness of the know nothings. It's really it'd be laughable if it weren't, you know, serious, because every year they roll out the same war on Christmas. They roll out the we're the only ones who have faith, you know, not the evil liberals. We're the only evil liberals. We're the only ones that have tradition.
Did you hear what Rush said about this, about St. Francis? Or Rush said about it?
But the Pope here has now gone beyond the Father's here, and this is pure foolishness. And I will share with you some of this stuff. Pope Francis attacked unfettered capitalism as a new tyranny. He's leading leaders, mobile leaders, to fight poverty and growing inequality, in a document on Jesus, setting out a platform for equality of the Catholic Church. Pope Francis went further than previous comments, criticizing the global economic system, attacking the idolatry of money. I got to be very careful. I have been numerous times to the Vatican. It wouldn't exist without tons of money. But regardless, what this is, somebody has either written this poem or gotten to him. This is just pure Marxism coming out of the mouth of the Pope. There's no such unfettered capitalism that doesn't exist anywhere. Unfettered.
The Pope is ripping America. The Pope is ripping capitalism. The Pope ripping Ronaldo's madness. The Pope ripping trickle-down economics. And Obama's having an orgasm.
I love how they are. They have to put it in.
He's having an orgasm over this.
This is just like what they did to Obama when he went to the meeting in Europe. What was it, just a week or so ogo? And they were saying he was ogling the Dutch girl or whatever, the prime minister, and he was a sexual beast and all that. The point is, they can say anything. They can be as disgusting or derogatory as humanly possible. They can be racist. They can be outlandishly lying. They can do all these things, and it's fine. But just like we were talking about earlier, let one liberal commentator or reporter say anything, even vaguely off-color, and they expect the people to be fired instantly. You remember the poor guy that was caught listing lines.
Oh, yeah.
For the New York Times.
Yeah.
Or whatever, that
right.
reporter. And
right.
They fired him and dragged him around the bus a few times just to make sure that everybody knew he had no skin left. And yet, we have people, their entire careers, like Ann Coulter or Paul Sagan.
Right.
They're half their books or other people's works, and yet they keep, you know, they keep their jobs.
Unbelievable.
So it's kind of sad, but it's,
it is.
It's bad. But look, one reason for some of them is to make it killing.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have right now some break. Give us some break.
I love Michael.
Marxist. The Pope is Marxist, so we need some grace.
The Pope is a Marxist. And then you know that whole Rush Limbaugh talked about how he had been to the Vatican. I am amazed that he made it out of the Vatican without lightning striking him. I am absolutely convinced that
God has grace. He is going to take care of him. He has to see him now Oh, he sees him later. He's going to see him.
Well, look, the thing of it is that, you know, part of it is correct. Yes, the Vatican is very, very, very rich. It's extremely wealthy. And the other part is, yes, a lot of the basilicas and the cathedrals and the churches and the, you name it, fill in the blank, are quite ornate and they're quite luxurious. And yes, the Catholic Church has in the past, you know, utilized it, the fear of death, the fear of the devil, and the fear of whatever, in order to solicit more money from the uneducated masses. But that doesn't make what Pope Francis is doing right now wrong. I mean, they're using a stupid false equivalency argument. Again, Pope Francis is redeeming the Catholic Church now because what he is saying is, you know, he is just setting aside all the pomp and the circumstance and the ceremony. He's setting aside all the luxury that he could, if he wanted to, that he could be living in. So what the heck does that have to do? I don't know.
The Pope's protection is God. They're going absolutely apoplectic because he's sneaking out. First of all, he doesn't live in the Vatican Basilica anymore. He lives in what cottages, and he took out most of the luxurious conveniences that they have in there. He said, "I want to live like I did in Brazil." And they said, "Well, no, you know, he says, no, I don't need that. And then he goes out, he takes off his garb, his dress, and puts on a regular priest outfit and sort doors in the different villages. So they warned him, do not do that anymore. You have to take someone with you. So now he takes one of the bishops with him, takes along a bodyguard, and they go out and they just arbitrarily knock on the door and say, I'm a new priest in town. I have some food. Can we celebrate dinner? And they go in, they celebrate dinner, and he leaves, and then they tell him, you know, where can we get in touch with you? Over at the Vatican. What? And they go ballistic. So the thing is that most of the people haven't seen him there, but said he wants to meet all the people. What is the story? He goes in and he washes their feet. He says blessing. And, you know, this is the type of person that Rush Limbaugh is going to call a Marxist and a capitalist shill. I mean, not shill, but he's a shill for the Marxists. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Listen.
But you have to understand that Rush Limbaugh, you know, if he's fortunate, he's got two functioning great selves, one on the left side of his head and one on the other, and they don't talk to each other. So they're no synapses.
Well, one of the things, I don't know if you heard the first part of the show, we were talking about the inequities in what we have in the world today, with Father Carl Esther, and he says that we have created new idols, the worship of the ancient golden calf. He has recreated in a new and ruthless guise in idolatry of money and the dictatorship of the impersonal economy lacking of truly human purpose.
Right, which is that whole thing about the prosperity doctrine. The prosperity doctrine was new, you know, it's not even in the flipping Bible, but somehow somebody has managed to convince people that it is in the Bible, that Jesus wants you to be rich. Well, actually, yes, he does, but he doesn't want you to be rich necessarily in money, but more rich in your own soul and rich in good works. And rich in the caring and the kindness and consideration that you bestow and you share with your fellow man. That is what Jesus asks us to do. Right.
And
so,
to stay healthy, and that leads us right into our conversation. That's on the line here is Nicholas Steiner, out from
Mike.
Healthcare. How are you, Nicholas? Great.
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much for asking.
Hello. And Nicholas, this is Grace. She's the 8th District Congressional Chair for the Democratic Party of North Carolina and is our point person in health care.
Nice.
And so tell us, Nicholas, how's things?
It's absolute whirlwind. I mean, that's one of the simplest ways I can put it. It's a lot of people looking for assistance out there, not as many agents out there to help them. So nowadays, from our conversation of a month ago when I was calling a lot of people back and answering a lot of their questions, now I can't even have time to call people back because I'm fielding so many calls of those that are able to get in, are finding that they qualify for assistance or are able to get coverage than they weren't before. So there's a lot more positive buzz than we had during our last conversation.
So are you saying that there's more people who want to get into this crummy healthcare system?
I would say that's correct.
Isn't that amazing? Wow. You know, who would think that people... So this healthcare system, Affordable Care Act, is so awful that so many people actually wanted to buy in on it. Amazing thing.
It is.
I can't believe that. I can't believe that. Somebody called Rush Limbaugh. I'm glad back with Sean Hannity. That's a relative.
Well, what has been the most frequent question asked of you?
Do I qualify for subsidy? That's probably one of the biggest ones, of people just not knowing what they're qualifying for and what they're able to get out there, and just finding that they want help to get that information to see if it's something that they should move forward with, whether they're going to be able to afford it, or what's going to make the most sense for the situation. It's just that general initial question, is it something I can get or not?
Well, I said, do you find that most people calling up have never had health care before or have health care?
I would say it's definitely a melting pot right now. The majority of the people, I would say 50 to 60% of them, are people that haven't had health care in the past 4 to 5 years. I would say that's a lot of people that are sparking interest when we're calling them back and finding out that they now have interest when they didn't ever before. And then those people that have had coverage also have more options now to choose from, so their interest has been spiked as well.
Are the people mentioning to you about, I have this pre-existing condition, and do I still qualify?
That seems to be most of them. Yeah, that seems to be most of them is, I have a pre-existing condition. I think that I'm going to be able to get assistance now to where I wasn't before, and I've been able to help quite a few people that have had diabetes, cancer, heart problems in the past that did not have insurance. They're basically getting by on a lot of doctors out there just helping people out and getting them prescriptions when they usually couldn't get them before, and just providing them samples to get through their situation until times like now.
Well, Grace has been great in her work. She works with the clinic across the country. And Grace, do you have something to pick us?
Yeah. So the free clinic, really, we've been, our numbers have picked up. The people that I work with are the uninsured, our numbers, and our patient population has increased. Lately, and I find that the majority of the people that I see don't even. Here's the thing: they're so beat down by their disease process. I mean, they are sick. They're so poor that when I ask them about the Affordable Care Act, they look at me. I can just see the expression in their eyes. It's a tired expression. They look like they're just worn out. And so when I ask them, have they, been able to explore this, some of them don't even know, some of them don't even care, but all of them have not been able to explore it because, A, they don't have the ability to get on the Internet, and, B, because they don't have the phone numbers. you know, you can always call and
Right.
But they don't have the information. So we've been sort of a clearing house in the pre-clinic, giving people the information, asking them to go ahead and call. I don't know that they have. I don't know that, you know, so I think they, our next step at the pre-clinic would be to say, okay, look, we're going to set aside a day, Friday or whatever, and you all come in and set up appointments and we'll help them get off, you know, and try to help them that way. That might be the only way that we're able to get them some information.
I mean, it's one of the more proactive approaches I've heard from that level out there. A lot of those facilities, you know, aren't taking that extra step to do that. Unfortunately, I wish it was the way that you guys are heading that off. And you're right. There just needs to be more information at that level to get to people because, like you said, not everybody has a computer. Not everybody's got a TV with cable and they're seeing commercials all the time. I mean, these are things that a majority of people do not have and we all take for granted.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And again, you know, when your blood sugar is in the 600 and you come to the pre-clinic and we finally got it to the 400, that's a great cool, but you try running around with a constant blood sugar of between 400 and 600 and see how you feel. You know, or blood pressure of 220 over 140. I mean, that's sick. So, again, as I'm talking about, you know, the basics, the bottom line is, I feel terrible, so I don't have the energy to do that one extra step. Now, having said that, I have some people that have tried, not I think, but some other people that you know, we've kind of gone on just to win. They don't have any insurance right now. They have two kids that were on Medicaid, but the kids have lost the Medicaid. So it's a family of four. And this family of four would ordinarily have qualified for Medicaid had they expanded it in North Carolina. But because they didn't expand it, now these people, in order for them to, at least this was, you know, 2 months ago, I don't know how it is now, but 2 months ago when we went on, their premium would have been $13,000 a year. There's no way they could afford that. They couldn't afford that. So.
Right. So what happens in cases like that, Nicholas, if someone calls you, the prescription drugs are out of sight, how would you take someone like that?
Well, in most cases, the prescription drugs are still a factor on all of the health plans. Whether it's on the exchange or off of the exchange, a lot of those plans are still subject to the deductible. You still have a co-insurance level. And really what you're looking for to help that out, and this is one of the biggest problems before you even got into the situation, is you're then looking for online discounts and different pharmacies, and if you're fortunate enough to live close to borders and all these other crazy situations, that's probably the biggest concern that I've had with everybody that I've talked to, is making sure that end of it's still taken care of, because that's what they're paying out of pocket for now.
But, absolutely. And so, you know, I have to say that it just absolutely galls me. It just ticks me off that Pat McCrory, Tom Tillis, the Burbank, all those people, those back of Republicans up in Raleigh, actually had the nerve, still have the nerve to continue to deny Medicaid expansion to so many of these people that it could help, you know? I mean, they're penalizing the poor. They're penalizing the poor. And I heard one of our Republican legislators, I think it was, Larry Pittman, who happens to be my legislator. Pittman, who said that the difference between a rich person and a poor person is just hard work. That's the only difference. Between rich and poor is hard work. So you're poor because you chose to be poor and because you don't work hard enough. Do you know how many people that I have patients of mine that work 3 or 4 jobs? Some of them sleep 20 minutes, between the jobs, get up, the car has to go to the second job, and then come back to sleep 3 hours before they go back again. I mean, he's going to tell me that this is the only difference is hard work, that poor people don't work hard enough. I just sit there and shake my head.
You know, haven't changed the mileage.
I know a lot of rich people that should be poor then.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Now, Nicholas, when you when someone first calls you up and say they, just like you said, there's some that haven't had insurance, and in say 5 or 6 years, so they completely have lost all reality when it comes to what insurance will give them or what it can provide them. What do they ask you besides, can I afford this? If they have a minimum wage job that's $50,000 a year or so, and it's a single purchase, what do they normally qualify for? Or do they qualify for what they want?
Yeah, well, all the qualifications as far as an individual are pretty much, you know, under $35,000 is going to start to get you some good subsidy as an individual, and then, you know, under $70,000 as a, you know, two-income earning household, you know, family with, you know, a couple of kids. So most of the situations I see are the general American public that, you know, they probably make $16,000 to $20,000. So a lot of those people are sitting in that gap of, you know, just above the Medicare or, you know, or Medicaid or Medi-Cal out here in California, and then still able to get the subsidy and assistance, but still coming down to, like we were talking to or about earlier, is what are my prescriptions going to cost me? What is the real out-of-pocket cost? Even though I'm paying so much or so less for a monthly plan, what else is above and beyond that that I'm going to be responsible for? And that's where the real education comes in. And the agents really need to be out there, let people know what they're actually getting. Or we're going to have a big problem come, you know, January, February, March, when all these people thought they were getting these full plans and everything's paid for, and to find out that they really weren't answering the right questions or the agents weren't providing them with the correct information. Because as you know, with the healthcare reform, if you call into the healthcare.gov line, you're just getting people that are telling you how to walk through the process. They're not explaining the type of plans to you. They're not telling you the difference between the plans. They're just saying, you know, this is what this is what that is. You actually have to get on the phone with an agent for them really to break down what those costs mean to you as a person walking in and out of a facility.
Well, that's where you come in.
Yeah.
The thing is, but how does a person know? I mean, you don't know what you don't know. How are they supposed to ask the question if they don't know what to ask?
Yeah. And that's the part out there that you really got to hope that you get someone that knows what they're talking about when you're talking to them. Or, yeah, you learn by default and you're educating yourself along the way, which is the worst case scenario of assuming, and nobody ever wants to do that.
My termite inspector was here today. He does my, semi-annual system. He was not aware of something. He was saying that he needed to his. And I gave him your name and everything and the phone number. And he said, well, he wants to talk to me first. He said, no, he didn't talk to me. He didn't talk to him. He said, well, I'm going to talk to you. I feel more comfortable. I said, okay, you come talk to me. Well, anyway, the thing is that but there's a lot of people like that because they don't know what to ask. And they don't want to sound like they don't know what to ask. So the thing is that if people like that are going to go to their broker who doesn't know anyway, not the broker, but the insurance person, that the insurance person is only going to do something, is going to give them something that is going to help them out in the long run.
Yeah.
So therefore, you know, I think what we only have, now we only have two experiences here in North Carolina. Is that right, Grace? I think.
Yes.
But not to choose from. But you go on the healthcare plan on the healthcare.gov, you might have 24 to choose from. So
that's
now
right.
You're saying it, you have no idea who's on first or what's on second.
Right.
Because there's so much to choose from.
So now
it's even worse.
It's almost damned by two choices.
Right. So when you have too many choices now, it's almost as bad if you only had one choice or two.
Yep. I agree with that. Confusion.
So someone comes in and they'll ask you, Nicholas. Look, what? I don't know what to choose. I don't know what I want. What do you ask them normally in a typical situation?
Well, the first three initial questions usually are the basics. How often do you go to the doctor? So you want to know how often someone's going to the doctor, whether that's a primary concern of theirs or not. Do you have any health conditions, or have you ever been hospitalized? So that's going to tell me then there. Are they taking any medications? Is there anything that they need to be treated for as far as surgery? And then usually once I find out what they're doing medical-wise, then I'll go to, you know, what would your budget be? What do you think you could afford monthly? And then now with the health care reform, what's your income? Because I want to start looking, hey, if I can get you some premium credits and some subsidy, that's the direction I want to take you in.
So, what happens now with the drug situation? That affects you now.
With what, Mike? You broke up. I'm sorry.
How is the drug situation affected? The drugs, people getting drugs. I know if you work for a company, you can always go to Medco.
I would suggest to the general public as well too, not to be supporting anyone that's not paying me, but Walmart and Walgreens are a really good reference for that. Most of your generics you're going to find for $10 or less there anyways. And a lot of our prescriptions nowadays are available on that generic level. It's just taking, asking your doctor, making sure that that's something that you'd be able to take. But we find the cost savings most of the time on that, and it's just getting on the phone with the doctor or the pharmacist and saying, hey, here's what their condition is. Here's the other prescription options that are out there. What do we have to choose from? And that's how I'm able to help most people out.
Well, I got a question, Andy. Maybe it's for life, it's killing me. I had a prescription called Dexilant that my doctor told me it was different from
Metformin and Aspirin.
He said, he says, but your insurance company might not pay for it. So I went to my drugstore, Rite Aid, and I said, my insurance. He said, oh, they're not going to pay for this because it's too expensive. I said, what? So it was $173 for 30 capsules, right? So he said, well, let's try it with Medco, which is now Express Scripts. And he said, try it with them.
Yeah.
And I remember, $173 for 30 capsules. I went to Medco, it was $45 for 90 capsules. Now, is there something wrong with this?
Something very wrong with this picture, right? Something very, very, very wrong with this picture.
And what's the myth? It's the middleman there taking the advantage, and we know that. We all know that, of course. I work with several mail order companies that if you order 30-day supplies and over the mail, they're getting your prescription pricing down to a third or maybe even less than what it was through the regular company. So I do that with a lot of people, even those that have Blue Cross or United Healthcare or Humana or Aetna or any of those major companies. When they aren't able to meet the prescription needs, I find that mail order most of the time makes sense, but not everybody wants to do that, and I understand that as well.
I don't get any drugs with my insurance company anymore. It's all with Medco. I mean, because it makes no sense to pay that. It's just ludicrous. So that means we've been getting the ripped off by these drug companies for
prescriptions are the worst. Worst.
Okay.
And then the incentives they were given to doctors and all that ridiculous stuff.
Absolutely. So how, we've had, when it first started, I think when we first spoke about this a month or so ago, October, Nicholas, I think it was like 226,000 people were signed up. And now, including the Medicare programs, we're talking about 1.3 million as of last Friday. And I know that's got to be double that because they're doing like 50,000 a day in Kentucky.
And even California's flying off. I mean, and you guys have seen those numbers too, but it's picking up more and more every day. I feel I'm going to be busy all the way, Christmas Eve through the end of the year and even into next year.
So now, what is the situation that people have to sign up Grace, they have to sign up by the 23rd of December. And in order to qualify to have...
Yep, they just pushed it to the 23rd for enrollment for January the 1st. That is correct.
Right, but it's not a setup. In other words, you can sign up afterwards, but you just won't get your COVID vaccine first, that's all.
Yeah, and afterwards is up until March 31st as of right now, but that could also change as well. We're not sure.
Well, you would think that it would change because so many people signing up. I mean, how could I accommodate it? You haven't got enough people.
Yeah, no, I'm sure that there will be accommodations, of course, I'm sure. I don't think that the President Obama will just say, oh, dear, too bad. He's not that kind of a fella. Yeah.
And
so I'm sure that there'll be some other accommodations.
Aren't the insurance companies making out like bandits?
Well, of course they are, because they've got 46 million more, or 30 million, more 40 million more people in their market. Sure, of course, they love it. Absolutely love it. You notice that none of the insurance companies have started making, airing negative infomercials or commercials against the Affordable Care Act. What is that? Gee, I wonder why.
I haven't seen one.
No, not a one. Not a one.
So,
yeah.
Nicholas, are you guys going to be hiring more people out there, or are you going to stay up till 24 hours a day answering calls?
pretty much right now, just staying through answering the calls because I still, want to make sure that it stays on the right path and everything continues to happen the way that it is. Last thing I want to do is go and change my business model when things could change again. You know, how our government can work sometimes. And we're just right now staying with our heads buried, helping as many people as we can, and really just trying to do the best job.
How do people, if they want to get in touch with you, Nicholas, how do they do that?
Yeah, our toll-free number is 866-966-9262. And then you just choose sales for a live agent, and someone will be able to assist you in your area. And we're about 32 states as well.
Okay. Well, and that's another thing. Just because you're in a state that doesn't have the Medicaid expansion or the state exchanges, you don't have to buy insurance in that state. You can go anywhere to buy insurance.
That's right.
Correct. Yes.
I understand that. Why, I don't think that was said enough in the rollout of this. Because I have that for just a few times. And a lot of people think they're locked in. Oh, gee. Oh, woe is me. I don't have an exchange, and I can't get expansion. So I guess I'm satisfied. Stay where I'm at, or I get nothing.
Yeah, I think actually the Republicans have played that up a bit.
Oh, yeah.
They've
absolutely played it up. I mean, and the negative commercials against Kay Hagan, the Obamacare doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Really? How do you know? I don't like broccoli, but I never tried it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know how.
Then you get older and you love broccoli.
You love broccoli. You're like, there you go.
I just like broccoli growing up. I love it now.
Well, here's another one.
With cheese.
A purely economic standpoint, from a business side of things. The Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot yet again because, like in this state, where they go out of their way to deny their citizens every possible, chance for health care that they can, they just drive the business elsewhere.
Yes, yep.
You know, setting up state exchanges instead of expanding North Carolina companies and having a lot of employees, that can do things like this, answer the phone and help customers. Now, they're just going to have to call other states and other services.
Yep.
Both of you can answer that. Grace, I ask you first, what happens if the state wants to now get in part and wants to now expand Medicaid and have an exchange by, say, May of next year?
Oh, well, good luck to them. I would love if they could expand Medicaid, if they accepted to expand Medicaid. That would be great. But as far as setting up their own health, I guess they could if they really, really wanted to. But it's not something that you can develop in such a short period of time. I mean, I don't know. I guess they could, but that would be really pushing it. And then, of course, if they did that, and then they said, all right, the state health exchange is up and running, and then it bombs, like, you know, the Affordable Care Act, who's going to take the blame? Obama. You know, who's going to blame Obama, that's right.
The federal government wouldn't give them the money to set it up for 3 years of a working, would they, after that?
I think they have, I think they're beyond the due date of the deadline. I think they're beyond that. I mean, I suppose they could, and I don't think that the federal government is going to be so petty as to say, no, you can't now. I'm sure the federal government will do something to help, but the reality of it is that they had 3 years to set it up, and they refused to, and they wouldn't. I mean, you know.
Behind the ball. They're going to be way behind.
Yeah, behind the eight ball, way behind. Right.
And how
and
is
then,
that?
Then you can blame it on Obama. Of course, you can blame it on Obama. But, you know, it's raining yesterday. It's Obama's fault.
Well, Nicholas, how would that affect you, or would it affect you at all? It wouldn't matter what the set up anything, would it?
On or off, it wouldn't affect me. The only thing that's affected me on that level is states like Colorado and California. Agents have to be residents of those states to sell the exchange, which some states have set as a rule. I think Maryland might be another one. But basically, the only people that can sell from those states have to be agents that are found there. So if a state changed to their own exchange and made that rule, then I just wouldn't be able to provide policies in that state.
Okay. Oh, okay, so you're saying that here in North Carolina, if we have an exchange, someone could call out in California and ask for it?
Yep. Oh, yes.
Correct.
Oh, if you have okay, so let's see, just because you have an exchange in your state, the law doesn't have to say that. Okay.
No, because there's like Kentucky I can help out. They have their own. Illinois is another one I can help them out. So it's based on the state's requirements and laws. That's the only way it would ever affect me.
So then that right now is that and you said before that you're finding more people calling in who have had insurance before but have had it maybe in 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Correct. Because we went through the situation with the recession, losing their jobs and all that stuff, that a lot of people just didn't obtain coverage again since they went through all that. Not only that, but the new job that they have gotten probably doesn't offer insurance where their old job that they had did, and that's a lot of the people that we ran into.
Well, what about the people who are involved with COBRA?
COBRA, that's something that you can still stay on if you want to keep it, or you can fall safe over to the health care reform plan or an individual plan.
COBRA is ridiculously expensive, in general,
Very expensive. And one of those, relics when people didn't have coverage and was less coverage, and that was you have to pay this ransom price or get nothing.
How do you explain, Nicholas, the people who have some of these outlandish insurances that they love so much? But it's just like I was talking to my termite inspector. He said that his is $2 million max, and I said, well, you don't have to have a max now. He said, well, that I did so. You have to have these insurances that are empty hole, and they don't even know it until something happens.
How do you explain to them?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of on the level of to each person their own kind of thing, especially with the health care reform. You call people up, some people are all about it, other people want nothing to do with it. And that's the kind of the same fact that you have with these people that have some of these older policies. You can only explain to them what's out there. They have to be the ones that really want to make the change or decision to move to something else. But it is still something I run to. Hey, I got it, I'm happy. I'm like, but there's also this, this, and this now. And I think a lot of that comes with fear of change. especially with what they've seen in the internet and the news, that they're just like, hey, you know what, I don't even care, I'm just going to stay with this for the next 12 months and see what happens.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, one of the problems, like Grace was saying earlier, there are so many the working people who are already open for and on top of it, we have such a that you're doing this, you know, every 6 months is budget just, you know, there's turmoil over some legislation. And they are just afraid that, you know, if it works 2 months later, it'll be turned off or whatever, that they don't, it's like you're don't even, you're just, and they're scared,
yep,
tired, don't have time to invest in learning a whole system of things. That's
yeah.
part of the problem. But that's also
yeah.
what they like to play up. That's
yeah.
what the GOP loves,
yeah.
you know, that uncertainty.
Yeah. Well, I know you're busy, Nicholas. You get back there. You, all right, break time's over.
Yes.
Get back to your 23rd line for All right. Well, I thank everyone very much for your time and having me on. As always, Mike, anytime that you'd like to have me back again, I'm more than welcome to come on and chat with you guys.
Thanks,
Barry. Because I want to know where you're at and people react now with the how many people that have been on and see if
you're, I think the first of the year would be another good react to the first of the year would be another
absolutely.
Good conversation to have with
absolutely.
That.
I think so, yeah. Because after the deadline, you know, it's been
mm-hmm. long.
Just get it
again. Here's your phone number one more time, Nicholas, and the name of your.
Yep, and the Preferred Health Online. You can find us at preferredhealthonline.com or call us at 866-966-9262. Thank you very much.
All right, Nicholas, thank you. Nicholas Steiner.
You guys have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Nicholas Steiner from Preferred Healthcare Online, and he will talk to you. So Grace?
That was very helpful. What Nicholas had to say was very, very helpful.
Very helpful. And
proving that the system is starting to work.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. Not only was it helpful, but it validates everything that we've been pushing and we've been saying for months now. Give it a chance. It will work. You know, but all these asinine Republicans are jumping up and down, getting their panties in a big old wad and saying, oh, it's not going to work, it doesn't work. And it hadn't even started, and you started, it doesn't work.
Well,
just like what Mike was saying earlier, it's kind of a sea change now that the dilemma of health care is that you might get 20 choices.
That's right. That's the problem.
Very amazing.
What choice?
Amazing.
I remember when I first started with the federal government, and we had to look at all these choices, we had all these health care plans. I said, well, I don't know, which one do I do? And I sat down with my supervisors, well, look,
yeah.
all things you can throw away, but these, what do you want? You want it for your family, you want a single coverage, you want that. And so you need to think of all these things and go into it. That's why it's great to have somebody like Nicholas who's going to sit down, he'll do all that for you, do all that strategizing for you, then say, look, this is what I believe will suit you. Now you tell me, it's this picture. And, you know, but, and that sort of helps people. It sort of takes fear out of it. You know, you don't have to do this all yourself. And so what are we going to do about these the clown show here in North Carolina?
We're going to vote them out. That's what we're going to do. We find good candidates, run against these Republicans, and vote them out. And again, good candidates meaning strong Democrats who are not afraid of being, quote, progressive, quote, liberal, people who are going to stand firm and strong on Democratic principles and ideals. Once again, I think everyone, if you look at the last election, people who ran on Democratic ideals, who argued the issues, won all those that ran Republican light lost.
Yes.
Take a look.
Absolutely.
Take a look.
Absolutely. You know, and speak about losing, and, you know, today is the anniversary of the shooting in Connecticut. And
yeah,
right on through, we got another shooting in Colorado. I mean, and that all those, well, two of the, three, I think there was three state senators who rather resign their job than run,
than be
recalled. All because of the legislature in Colorado. Now we have the same thing going on again in Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, where is this going to stop? This is outrageous.
Well, and I'll remind you, during the last election just months ago, half the state almost seceded out there,
right,
because of, they wanted no gun law at all. You know, they wanted
it's
no
just, restrictions. It's just insane. It's just absolutely insane. It really, really is. And, you know, even the NRA members are wanting stricter gun laws. It's the gun lobbyists, the gun manufacturers that don't want to restrict the gun laws. And waiting up here, that's just the team that the gun lobby plays. Not, he doesn't listen to NRA members. Seriously, members of the NRA want stricter gun laws. They don't want to be aligned with the crazy screaming lunatics that are brandishing semi-automatics and going to schools and say, shoot them up on kids.
Right.
But what is it going to take, though, when we have already in Colorado another shooting?
There's another shooting in Colorado.
Almost every few months, around the country somewhere.
This is, and now the shooter killed himself. So, but see, the thing is, though, what is it going to take? What is it going
to
take?
Well, you know, that recall was, you have to blame it on the Democrats. Okay, you have to blame it on the progressive people because they didn't go to the polls. The only people that went to the polls,
right,
to the polls were the right-wing nutjobs. Right.
That's
it. Had it been before the real population, it wouldn't have passed.
We are so lazy as a political party in this country. We have all the numbers. There would never be a lunatic fringe in any office if we just voted with half our strength.
That's
the whole thing. Half our strength.
They're less than half our strength. Right.
Some Democrats. Because I know a lot of people that do work, like I said, two jobs, three jobs. And a lot of times, because, you know, I always have to take off or do whatever, not, but a lot of times people can't. Their employers refuse to let them off or whatever, and they simply can't make it to vote, which is also why the Republicans are hell-bent on trying to restrict voter access in every way possible.
Right.
So they, you know, they take away the Sunday votes, for instance, so that they know people can't vote during the week and things like that. That is why they have voter restriction, because it does suppress the vote. Because not that all people, there are plenty of apathetic people out there, but a lot of people simply don't have time. I mean, all the time, somebody that I wanted to, I tried to, you know, whatever. And I understand. But it is also, there's a huge segment of our population that simply just sits on their stuff.
Yeah, but you see, it's also because of this. Just listen.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Yeah, they have some gall, you know? They make it very clear they really do want to restrict the poor riffraff from voting. Oh, you don't vote. We want the landowners to vote and only the rich people to vote. That's all.
here's the thing. They've gotten a lot smoother at it.
They've gotten a lot. I would say use another term other than braver, but that's okay.
I don't think they've gotten much smoother. You got the Ted Cruzes out there that said, what are you, Ted Cruz saying today? I mean, you were just reading it.
You know, there's so many. What?
I mean, the last one, you were talking about when we had Father Carlo. You were talking about that.
When he was, we were talking about he.
That he doesn't want, that, you know, the problem is, that, yeah, well, he is the Pope.
No, we were, you know, earlier we were talking about the lady. You know, we got one person over here claiming that Jesus and Santa Claus are all white all the time.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. Tell me. Well,
they say something.
I am sure. Now, I want you, Grace, just listen, and then I'm going to ask you a question about this, because I'd like to know what you thought. Now, just listen. This is Nate Kelly,
It's sweet they have a piece on .com. Santa Claus should not be a white man anymore. And when I saw this headline, I kind of laughed. And I thought, this is so ridiculous. Yet another person claiming it's racist to have a white Santa. You know? And by the way, for all you kids watching at home, Santa just is white. But this person is just arguing that maybe we should also have a black Santa. But, you know, Santa is what he is. And just so you know, we're just debating this because someone wrote about a kid. Okay, well, let me get that straight. The author seems to have... You know, she's African-American, and she seems to have her pain of having grown up with this image of a white Santa, and she speaks about it kind of honestly, saying, I don't really understand why that had to be. So I've given, her name is Aisha Harris, I've given her her view on where she was going with it. But just because it makes you feel uncomfortable doesn't mean it has to change. You know, I mean, Jesus was a white man, too, but, you know, it's like, we have a historical figure. I mean, that's a verifiable fact. As is Santa. I just want to watch him to know that.
Now, just tell me.
Hey, I got news for Megyn Kelly, okay? First of all, St. Nick, which is Santa Claus, was Turkish. The original St. Nick was from Turkey. And Jesus was a Jew. He spoke Aramaic, and he was far from white.
Megyn Kelly,
you need to go back to school or something.
Yes, that kills me. You're telling me that every Japanese, every Filipino, every Indian child in their countries as Catholic believes or non-Catholic believes that Santa Claus was white? I don't think so.
No.
I just don't know.
The origins, old St. Nick, okay? Yeah, old St. Nick was from Turkey.
That's
Turkey.
Right.
Okay, Turkey.
My grandson.
If anything, he can be considered Asian.
I said all the old descriptions of him and the iconographic images. They all said he was olive complexion.
Right.
Yeah.
So and we
exactly.
Read, but they dug up his body.
He was a Turkish.
Yeah. Tell about when they dug up his body.
Oh no, we were talking about this. They said they actually exhumed his. They have a crypt with his bones supposedly, but they passed his Byzantine time. And they exhumed him back in the 60s, whatever, and measured him and photographed him and everything else and did a anatomical study of him. And they found out that not only did he have a broken nose, but at the, 5 feet. So basically, you're talking about a broken nose, itty-bitty little Turkish.
Well, he was an elf.
my gosh. A little Turkish guy. So, and how he morphed to this ginormous giant of a man with a ruddy nose and white hair and white beard wearing a red suit. How the heck did he morph into that?
Did it.
Coca-Cola.
Oh, it's Obama's fault. Wait. It's Obama's fault.
All right.
Obama.
That's right. Thanks, Obama. But I saw the videotape. And Megyn Kelly was absolute with this. She says, and remember,
yeah,
kids, Charles was right. So you're okay by saying that. And also, Jesus was right, and they were both historical figures. Like, Santa Claus was a historical figure?
Yeah.
What is wrong with these people?
And, I mean, and Jesus was born. I mean, this is, these are literally the people. You know, there's old, especially in the South, they have this pamphlet for Jesus with, like, blonde,
yeah,
short hair, and blue eyes. Yeah.
Which is exactly why that whole thing, there are no journalists in the world today. There are none. There are no journalists on TV. Well, there's only one. That's my husband, Joe Galloway.
There
are no journalists in the world today. But if you look right now on TV, they ain't nothing.
Well, you see, they got rid of, Martin Bashir.
Yeah.
I mean, because you know what he said, right?
I do know what he said, and I happen to agree with him.
Sure.
I happen to absolutely agree with him, because he's better. Fair parents, idiots like that don't get it. Let me tell you a little story, okay, about the Nazis. I'm not trying to make any kind of equivalency or anything like that, but here's the story. There was, during World War II, in the concentration camps, a coveted position for the Jews. And this was called the Scheidskommandant, okay? It was a coveted position because you could stay warm. And what they got the Jews, they assigned this particular job to the Jews. The Scheidskommandant was literally translation, a Scheidskommandant. That's really what it was, literal translation. And what that person did was he went in and he stirred the Scheid. Okay, he was the person that got bitten, stirred the shite, got rid of it that way, and it was a coveted job because the shite was warm. I mean, that is how a base is really. So no, people like Sarah Pierce don't understand what it's like to be a slave. They don't understand what it's like to be in a position where you're so he is actually dominated by somebody else. Okay, so yes, I happen to agree with Mark Bashir. I agree with him. Because do you think in slavery there were not jobs equivalent to that accorded to the slave?
Of course.
Really?
Absolutely. Well, and I forget who it was that said that Oprah Winfrey, it was that other guy, Martin Levine. He says, Oprah Winfrey said that they would treat Obama like a slave, Levine said, she has no idea what it is to be a slave. She has no idea.
And Levine does? Levine has some idea? Wait, hello?
And she has no idea what it meant to suffer like a slave. Now, this is the type of rhetoric whoever is moronic to believe that he knows more than... matter of fact, let me just play this idea. I got it right here. This is what Levin said.
Let me tell you something, folks. Oprah Winfrey has no idea. Oh, I know she's black, but she has no idea. No idea. Most of us have no idea what it's like to live in a country that really is brutally racist.
So,
Levin
is an idiot. Number one, he's an absolute idiot because, first of all, Oprah Winfrey wasn't born a multi-billionaire, you know? She became it through hard work. Exactly. She was born poor, and she worked her way up, which shows the strength of her character. So because she's a multi-gazillion billionaire today, doesn't mean that she doesn't understand about slavery. She certainly does. Look, she made that movie, The Color Purple. You know, she, if anything, has been the greatest and biggest and best spokesperson for the African-American person in the United States, because she actually has a platform. So
yes.
For example, Levine, I'm speechless. I'm just going to sit. I'm sitting here shaking my head. Levine is a moron. God.
They don't care. But these are the same ones that they love to play with things. They're the same ones who, up until President Obama became president, you realize that they kept Mandela on a terror.
Yeah.
Like to the United States, right? Without giving special dispensation from, you know, GOP. But they do things like, you know, calling a terrorist and all this, but then at the same time, they want to be on those bills. I mean, nice. But people like Ted Cruz, Ted said he was so disgusted, he had to walk out of the room because he asked for speech about Mandela.
Right.
Things like that. So they'll play these games back and forth and back and forth, like, but, you know, that's how it gets. Or well, you don't know what slavery's like to a black lady.
Right.
Are you kidding me? That's the same over and over again.
No,
but Sam Torm.
Yes,
you know, Mr. Linkage.
Oh, yes.
Being apartheid because of Obamacare.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, this is the kind of things that they say with a straight face. And like she said, unbelievable that they even uttered. But yet they call it
fantasy opinion. The garbage that is spewed out, that they spew out of their mouths is just mind-boggling. You can't have a conversation. Right when that job tried to have a conversation with me, actually wasn't a conversation, he was throwing questions at me. And when I tried to answer them, he would talk over me and throw another question. And what about this? What about that? What about the other? And when I tried to reply, he would, you know, just keep interrupting. I finally just stopped talking. And he realized there was this silence. And so he said, well, what's the matter? I said, I'm not going to talk to you because, you know, this is not a conversation. So I just walked away from it. But that was the Levines and the Hannity's and the Glenn Beck's too. And the lip bars and the Bill O'Reilly too. They throw rhetoric at you. Constant rhetoric. And they don't give you a chance to really have a conversation. So there's no point really trying to have a conversation with people like Mark Levine or people like Glenn Beck or any one of those other idiots that think they're so intelligent. You know?
It would be funny if they actually rhetoric. But they don't. They throw words. Shows the definition.
Yeah.
Because they often do things like in the same sentence, say that Obama is a fascist, communist,
Right. Right.
You know, you got to roll your eyes.
And you can't go three. Listen, but I want you to tell me, Grace, what you thought about what Rand Paul said.
I do support unemployment benefits for the 26 weeks that they're paid for. If you extend it beyond that, you do a disservice to your workers. There's a study that came out a few months ago, and it said if you have a worker that's been unemployed for 4 weeks and on unemployment insurance and one that's on 99 weeks, which would you hire? Every employer, nearly 100%, says they will always hire the person who's been out of work 4 weeks. When you allow people to be on unemployment insurance for 99 weeks, you're causing them to become part of this perpetual unemployed group in our economy.
I'm going to tell the person whose unemployment benefits are going to expire next week that, you know, and so he won't have any benefits, nothing. He won't be able to pay his rent, pay for the electricity, buy food for his kids, you know. Merry Christmas, right? And I'm doing you actually a favor by cutting off your benefits. Really? Really?
What? Is this the most...
Grandpa. What? I want to know what that guy's been smoking, eating, and drinking. I really do.
Yeah.
I really want to know it. But because, Because whatever it is that he's been smoking, drinking, and eating, I want to make sure we quarantine that thing, and that would make sure that nobody else gets it. Because...
I think he's been rolling up Atlas drugs and lighting them.
The thing is that why, and here's what Ted Cruz said about the same thing.
Saying they want health care, do not realize that expanding Medicaid will worsen the health care options for the most vulnerable among us in Texas.
Texas will not be held hostage by the Obama administration's attempt to force us into this fool's errand.
Texas has more unemployed, uninsured. I want to say than any other state in the nation. I really want to say that.
So correct.
Texas
you
is
are
more
correct.
Uninsured than any other state in the nation. Okay.
Absolutely.
And we have, and there's more illness, chronic illness,
yes,
in that
there is.
State. Yeah.
That's
so
true.
For Ted Cruz to have the nerve to say that is again, and first of all, mind-boggling, number one. And number two, it shows just how uninformed he is about his own state. And if he is informed about it, then how uncaring he is about his own constituents. He could care less. He is not representing. Texans, you do not have representation in the Senate. You do not. You've got two people. You've got Cornyn and you've got stupid Ted Cruz who don't know anything about your condition, about your position, about how you feel, and how they don't care. They're
no, they don't care. And here's what Bob Rubio, said.
We are going to have a debt crisis in this country. It is going to continue to destroy jobs. It's going to disrupt the functions of our government. It's going to threaten our national security. When are we going to get serious about dealing with this once and for all?
So Mark Rubio is another moron from Florida. Okay,
well, well, but see, so the thing is that it is just so outlandish that if you give people a job, if you give them, first of all, this is unemployment insurance.
Right.
These people have paid for unemployment insurance.
Exactly.
When they work.
Right.
And you can only get unemployment insurance if you have worked.
Right. But that's like the
absolutely. And, by the way, let's talk about insurance. Let's talk about, by the way, Mark Rubio put his family on the Affordable Care Act, but he's still out there talking about how it doesn't work.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yes, you're right. Oh, yes, that's true.
Ain't that a wonderful thing?
Remember that Ted Cruz's dream was that he said 100 more people like Jesse Helms in the Senate.
That's good.
And then we could get this stuff done.
Well, I'm sure. If we had 100 people like, listen, I don't understand. Why do these people denigrate the federal government job, or is it they only denigrate workers? Because these guys don't work.
Oh, no, they only denigrate the federal government if they don't benefit from it themselves. Okay,
that's correct.
So for example, here we get the same group of people that talk about Ted Cruz and Cornyn and Rubio and all those guys who talk about how government needs to be small, we need to drown it in the bathtub, we need to get rid of it because government doesn't work. Gentlemen, who pays your salary? What are you working for? What job are you in? You are part of the government. And if you hate government so much, why did you apply for the job?
That's just right.
Also, I want to just point out, this fact always cracks me up. These are two prime examples of GOP, but these are perfect examples. Rubio and Cruz both are the sons, and both of them have very...
Right.
Versions of the legend.
Absolutely.
Both of them are sons, supposedly, Cuban, expatriate, saved by immigrants, right? That's the story. Both their parents, fled the evils of communist Cuba somehow and ended up here for them to become successful.
And their families benefited from government handouts.
Exactly. They attack exactly the success system that made them what they are and saved their
family.
That's what blows my mind. You know, and just like this guy Cruz, for instance, sitting here praising, if only we could have 100 more Jesse Helms. Well, let's be real for a minute. If you had 100 Jesse Helms in there, do you think for 30 seconds he'd let a Cuban Canadian in the building?
Exactly. If he had 100 more Jesse Helms, Rubio and Cruz would still be in Cuba. Do they even hear what they're saying? I don't know. Do they hear what they're saying? I don't know.
Morning Joe, who I think shows every day why he was only one turn in the Florida, the federal government at South. But, you know, sometimes even a clock is right twice. But here's what he had to say to Paul Ryan.
He said this, though, last night. Quote, you know, your deal is going to make it harder for Americans to achieve the American dream. What would you say to Marco? Read the deal and get back to me. The other thing is we're stopping these government shutdowns, and we don't think having two government shutdowns over the course of the next year is in anybody's interest.
Yeah, that was Marco talking to Paul Ryan, you know, our resident Eddie Munster. But, you know, Paul Ryan and John Boehner grew some testicles this week when they said, oh, we're signing a two-year budget because we're saying they're going to have another shutdown because it's killing the Republican Party.
It's killing the Republican Party. Exactly. So they don't care that it affects the average citizen, but they do care when it affects them.
Absolutely.
And then, unfortunately, that is how we got to get to them. Michael.
Yes.
I need to run.
Okay.
It's been a wonderful conversation.
Joe, and kiss the baby.
I will kiss Joe, and I'll kiss the baby. This time, in that order. In that order. Okay. I will talk to you again, Michael. It's been a great, 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 great show. Really, honestly, wonderful show.
You were great. As always, you are fantastic. And we have to make sure that we get a good little send-off with the Affordable Care Act is going to be a major difference by, I think, January.
I think so. Come January. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Dr.
All right, my dear.
It's going out.
I just want to pull something out.
Yes?
I'm looking at his Senate page.
His
Senate page on his own, you know, post that he has. And this is he does this on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all this, but his official comment on Nelson Mandela passing.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, well, he was there.
Like I said, he walks out of the room. He announced that, by the way. He announced, I will walk out of the room when Castro comes in to talk about it. But so,
in the rain?
This is a guy who disrupts a man's funeral. Because, you know, isn't it about the man? And, you know, if he wants his friends and family to show up, you know, that's nothing to do with this. By the way, complete stranger, Ted Cruz, who showed up at the funeral. But anyway, so he disrupted the man's honorable, you know, memorial to do his own grandstanding. But officially, he says, Nelson Mandela will live in history as an inspirational defender of liberty around the globe.
Oh.
And he goes on this whole thing about how he falters as it. And even the age of quoting says, he said, freedom is indivisible, and the chains on any one of my people are chains on all of them. And the chains on all of my people are chains on me. Because of this epic fight against injustice, the entire nation is now free. We miss him, blah, blah, blah. You know, obviously. And this is the same guy in December, just half a month before, was saying that that Kenyan terrorists in the White House hired Nigerian email scammers to build Obamacare. The website, right? Same mouth.
Yeah, well, those guys, you got to hire them because it's working like gangbusters now.
Nelson Mandela is, you know, a friend of ours. It'll inspire us for history.
Absolutely.
They're just old face liars. And the racism is palpable. And it's sad.
Well, see, the problem is, it depends on who's, you know, what time of the day it is and who's listening to them.
Yeah.
See, because, you know, the different times of the day they're on the air, the scam artists, the spin bars, and whatnot.
There's no bearing on reality.
Of course
not.
Well, we need to get to...
Mike, we covered a lot.
Chris is white.
Anthony
Israel. Anthony Israel.
The Kenyan extortionist. We got all that taken care of.
Not quite about the extortionist, the independent.
Well, we've already gotten the Vatican's been taken over by Marxists. But what more do you want to talk about?
Are you sure? Have they been taken over by Marxists?
Well, that's what I heard Russ say. I don't know.
Well, I understand that Glenn Beck is going undercover, posing as a...
In his Christmas sweater.
Yes, in his Christmas sweater. He's going to go undercover, and he is going to pose as a...
Phantom?
No, as a South American Marxist.
Ah.
Yes. Because, you know, the Pope is a Marxist, and he came from South America.
There you go.
I want to play something. Hey, now this is, this in person a deal. We gotten...
What the heck?
We're going to give you the latest. I have the latest off the hot presses. I'm sorry, it's not from an American outlet. It's an English outfit.
And it wouldn't be new.
That, of course, has really been on the ball here. So let's just listen. This is going to tell us all the details about this interpreter.
Supposed deaf interpreter.
Yes.
The Nelson Mandela Memorial.
Okay.
Turned away from park and ride facilities on this final day of Nelson Mandela's lying in state. This is the NCA. We continue our coverage of South Africa's farewell to Nelson Mandela. A very good afternoon to you. I'm Andrew Barnes. We start with breaking news at lunchtime. ENTA can exclusively reveal that the sign language interpreter at the Nelson Mandela Memorial was an accused killer. Tamsanka Yanki was charged with murder, attempted murder, and kidnapping. ENTA investigative reporter Karen Morn has also unearthed that he faced rape, theft, and assault charges. This poses serious questions about security arrangements for Tuesday's memorial service. Yanki stood just meters away from world leaders, including U.S. President Barack Obama.
At first, it all seemed fine. Here we see the so-called interpreter signing as U.S. President Barack Obama delivers his speech at the Nelson Mandela Memorial. Obama is one of the most heavily protected men on the planet, but not in South Africa, it seems. Also on stage, world leaders from China, Cuba, Brazil, India, and of course, President Jacob Zuma. It quickly emerged that Tommy Zanke was not a real sign interpreter at all. His signing made no sense, and he was dubbed a fake. The story went global, and giant was portrayed as a joke. But this story took a serious turn when ENCA established that he was mentally ill. Giant admitted to us that he was a heavily medicated schizophrenic who had spent time in the Strathfontein Mental Hospital. What he did not reveal, though, was his long criminal history. ENCA, through police and court records, has discovered that Janky has been charged with theft in August 1995, housebreaking in July 1997, malicious damage to property in April 1998, rape in September 1994, murder, attempted murder, and kidnapping in May 2003. He was acquitted of the rape, while all other charges bar the murder were withdrawn. His only criminal conviction is for theft in 1995, for which he is recorded to have received a 3-year sentence. Court records reveal that the 2003 murder, kidnapping and attempted murder case against Janky and two other people was referred to the South Gauteng High Court in 2004. It was finalized in November 2006, but the court file for the case is empty. Janky has refused to comment on what happened to the case, and we are unable to confirm claims that it was dropped because he was found mentally unfit to stand trial. Zuma has himself championed controversial new secrecy laws in South Africa, and his government frequently makes use of the National Key Points Act to ensure so-called national security. So how then can such an eminently blunder be explained? Karen Morn, Johannesburg.
Good morning, this was joined by Karen Morn. Karen, you sat down with the guy just yesterday. What's his reaction to all of this?
Well, it's interesting because initially when I first met him, I actually felt incredibly sorry for him. He was admitting that he'd suffered these violent outbursts. But when I started speaking to the people that had worked with him at the Boksburg Magistrates Court and started doing some scratching and running traces on his ID number, the terrific sort of criminal history emerged. Bear in mind that that story did not reveal that, in fact, he's been also a complainant in several assault cases from 2011 in which he allegedly got into fights with people and then accused them of assault. So this is a story that I think is just going to grow legs and go further and further and further. But when I phoned him yesterday and I said, look, we have information that you were accused of murder in 2003, our understanding is that you were declared mentally unfit to stand trial and as a result you never were prosecuted for that. And he became quite irate with me and said, how did I know this highly personal information about him? And certainly from a records perspective, it's been very difficult to track this case down. The fact that the file is empty, the fact that we don't know who the co-accused were, the fact that the NCA is confirming the existence of this case but can't say what happened to it is all very disturbing.
All right, so beyond that, what else does the NCA have to say?
Well, they say they can confirm that there's a case that took place, but they cannot give us any, because the file is missing. We don't know if he was acquitted, which the police records reflect a not guilty or acquittal. But the police have spoken to me and say they don't have a mechanism on their system to record if someone is declared mentally unfit. So it would be then recorded as a not guilty verdict. The NPA are unable to say at this point what happened, but we do know that he was referred to Strathfontein, that he spent some time in Strathfontein, and we can sort of see the basic skeletons of a suggestion that in fact he was found mentally unfit, referred for psychiatric hospitalization, was then released, and summarily went and worked for the Justice Department.
This story, excuse me, making the government extremely uncomfortable. What about that?
Well, this is the real problem here. We know that justice officials have confirmed to us that he was under investigation for a 1.5 million rand fraud in which he was alleged to have made false claims for interpreting work that he'd done for the state that he had actually not done. And we understand that the investigating officer in that case was intimidated, that a key witness didn't want to testify, and that nothing really happened with it. But so far, 2 days, after 2 days of these increasingly damaging revelations, we have not heard a peep from government in response to the fact that they had an accused murderer on stage with a number of very high-level dignitaries We are trying to get comments on that. Then the Justice Department keeps referring us to GCIS, but it's so far after about 24 phone calls to Pumla Williams, who's the spokesperson that we need to speak to, not even a single response.
Well, it's going to get increasingly difficult for government to stay silent on this. It's just breaking here on ENCA. We'll have more details as soon as they become available. Karen Moore, thank you. You deserve to know more. ENCA.com.
No, we were talking, but I don't think you ever heard it. But that's quite all right. That's quite, they must have heard us through, with the angels. Yeah, we were talking about.
We're talking about poor Janji's mental schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia? That's only half his story.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was terrible. We just talked about it. Fun time about it, I guess. We won't rehash that.
Well, we can rehash it for those in real limbo, as Rush Limbaugh says. You know, they have to be told twice.
Yeah.
Well, this man.
So it was a black eye.
You'll read those charges again.
Some of the charges that they mentioned that he's been accused of is rape, theft, housebreaking, malicious damage to property, attempted murder, and kidnapping. Plus, he's being treated for schizophrenia.
And that was all in the same day.
Yeah, exactly.
That wasn't
the
day before.
The only reason he had served time is he was declared mentally unfit at his own trial. So,
well, what's that that they said in, Jack Collins said in the movie, what's the name, can't think of the movie, where he was the cowboy. He says, well, he says, they ain't over yet.
Yeah.
what's in gold? There it was. So this man, has he done to any other Republican congressman hasn't done? What has he done?
What's the difference? Unfortunately, you know, you just saw this news the other day. That 16-year-old rich kid ran over.
Oh, God. Give me a break.
Put a whole bunch more in the hospital, and then they let him off because he's rich.
Affluenza? No, affluenza. Affluenza, right?
Yeah. He's not guilty because he doesn't know the difference between good and bad. You know, he's not morally culpable. It's just unbelievable. But hey.
So. Now, is he getting off, or is he going away for a year? He's going away a year in a lockdown facility, right?
No, I don't think he's going away to a, he's going to get help.
A lockdown facility, and that is, Biltmore, at the Biltmore, right?
Yeah.
Biltmore Estates? That's the lockdown facility where he's going?
I'm looking at Jack Palance's. Career, you know his real name.
Curly's gold. That's what that where he got that. With a statement from.
Another one of those, just like John Wayne, they cracks me up. All these other things, you know, all the great American legends, but they're not American and they're all immigrants, right? This guy, his real name. Volodymyr.
Right.
Talent Week.
Yeah, was he? He's Turkish or Russian or something. What is it?
And
you know,
just but again, it cracks me up.
Well, what about Kirk Douglas? Right. I mean, Kirk Douglas is a Russian, you know, hey, what do you got?
His parents were Ukrainian immigrants.
Ukrainian.
He was born in Miami, right. Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So see that right there is the American dream. You know, you can come from anywhere and become a
except for Kenya.
Truth be told, you can be a Kenyan terrorist with a fake birth certificate and still be president of the United States. That's a great place.
Oh, wow. What's the guy say? He says, how wonderful is America?
And
you can be from Cuba and be in an astute candidate.
A Cuban terrorist because, you know, his father was a Molotov cocktail guy.
That's right.
And born in Canada. And you still run for president.
And you can still run for Canada. And didn't we make fun of those Canadians?
You know, that was the Bush years. This is all different now.
Oh, right, not right.
Canadians anymore.
Yes, right. That's right. That's
they
right.
Not Canadians. We were not.
Come give me a break. But the it's only the state where you can live and laugh and talk about your neighbor because they're different than from you. They might be smarter, therefore you gotta throw them under the bus. You can't be smart in this life. They don't want you to be smart. They don't want you to be smart. As a matter of fact, if I find it on here.
Yeah, I just want to share this with you. A little bit more Jack Palance lore.
Oh, a little bit Jack Palance? Yes, go ahead.
Talking about another, the American Dream. One of six children born in the mining town. Extreme
Pennsylvania.
Impoverished.
Right? Pennsylvania?
Yep. He worked in coal mines throughout his entire youth. Because, you know, hey, youth laws, who cares?
Yeah.
He became a professional boxer.
Oh, yes, I know that.
His name was Jack Brazo. But he won 15 straight fights, 12 by knockout.
Oh, yeah. He's a good boxer. Oh, yeah.
This was a tough cookie right here. But then he said, yeah, I thought about it later. I said, must be nice to get your head beat in for $200 for a fight. Oh, Lord.
Well, the thing is that what we need to do here is make them an offer they can't refuse.
Mm-hmm.
And we will tell the...
yeah, but how do you find that in fake deaf language? That's what I want.
Well, listen, you know, we have different people who are, who list their, who want their punishment to be, they want it to be out in public.
Mm.
So, and this is what they try to do to people, poor people, who can't defend themselves. They want to ridicule them and push their face in the ground and then step on them again so they never get up.
Right.
They want people to be ashamed of who they are. But yet these same people who ran away because their faces were being pushed down in the ground, now come here and want to do it to other people.
Sad.
I mean, it's just how it is. They want to do it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's kind of like those chicken hawks that we used to talk about in the Bush years, where they would all run around thumping their chest and wearing flag lapels and talking about how much more patriotic they were than anybody else. And yet, they were the absolute king of draft dodging.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The king of draft dodging.
You know, people who don't remember where they came from or what they do, and don't remember the hands up that they were given over and over and over again, because you know what? I hate to tell people, no one makes it.
Well,
it's just a self-made perfection. Everybody's been helped by a parent or a teacher or
someone. Oh, no. No, not according to the Republicans.
Right.
Everybody pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. When Elizabeth Warren said, you did not build that, she meant the roads. I mean, they built the roads. They built the gas. They built the tires. They built the cars so they could get everywhere. You know, it's just like in the TV series Dracula. Okay? Yeah, I really like it. First of all, the cinematography is fabulous, but they throw the whole story on its end.
Right, right.
Van Helsing is now helping Dracula.
Right.
And the story behind that is because, and I know all these capitalists aren't going to like it, but Dracula is there for the capitalists. The people that control the oil and control the coal and whatnot. And Van Helsing, because they're the same people that burnt down his house, killed his wife and daughter, and put him in the ground. And
I think you're missing.
Yes.
The real story.
The
real story is that the elite society, the 1% who are actually doing any work, not just reloading, and actually accomplishing things, and actually building up the world around them, the elite perfected 1% of the world are being attacked by the vicious, vampiric war. They're trying to leech the blood out of them, literally.
Well, you see, that's what the whole story of Dracula is about. They are the leeches and taking the blood
out of it, although he gets back at him a little bit here, now and then bite a little bit. But that's the whole story.
Yeah.
They are now the ones that are the vampires of the modern era.
Yeah.
And what has happened is that they take what they take is that what they do is they take the storyline and they take my grandkids just came in here, both of them. Anyway, what they do is they take the storyline and they take it where these leeches kill Dracula, and then Helsing wakes up Dracula 250 years later and says, look, my family was killed by the same people. We have to join together. He says, but these deaths and Dracula's out. Drain all their blood. He says, no, no, no. Because what you do is you kill that person, but the rest of the family has everything else. He says, what you need to do is we need to take the money from them. When you take their money, that's the same thing as draining their blood.
Yeah,
and you
really
leave nothing to their families. Their families will be poor. So this is the story of, and that's why I like it. So I'm sure it's not getting good billing with the conservative party because see, a lot of them are so stupid they don't understand it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is. To get back at them, he's going to take their money away, not take their life. You see, but see, he'll take their money away, then kill them, but now their family has nothing. So they will never be back there again.
You know, you have to hurt them.
That is
the real way. Not just, you know, you can shoot a vampire all day long and doesn't hurt him. That type of idea. But with the rich, you can kill him, you can do this, and but you want to really hurt him,
take their money. And see, you know, you don't want them to be your slave around like Renfield. Oh, think about Renfield. Renfield is completely different.
Yeah.
He is no look. This Renfield is not a little weak, meaning this guy is a black guy. He's 6'5", 250 pounds,
yeah.
And is a lawyer. So therefore. This is so fabulous. Oh, well, he's a terrorist, all right, because you don't take advantage of him.
Maybe a
prompt wing. Oh, God, it is so good. Anyway, but we're getting ready to have a Christmas here, and your boy just medicine sure kicked into me. I feel fine, not a pain.
Yeah.
Medicine working great.
I think it's helpful,
but. No. Medicine, I didn't have that. Probably I did have a little sip, but. I tell you, it is wonderful.
Nice.
But anyway, we're going to have a light, a big Christmas thing outside. The guys come and do my lights or something. We're going to have a big Christmas tree out front, and the whole place will be decorated. It's going to be beautiful. I think I will take that and put it on the Christmas card.
There you go. It's beginning to look
That's right. And Blake's going to be in a Christmas show. When are you going to be in the Christmas show? No, tomorrow's Saturday.
Christmas show. Well, it might be.
So you don't know. No, it's not tomorrow. Yes, it's going to be after because the one will be tomorrow. But is your cousin in a Christmas show too? No? This year. Okay. Well,
In the cast of Dynasty.
In the cast of Dynasty, right. No.
Not that one.
Not that dynasty. The real dynasty.
The Carrington.
That's right. The Carrington.
The Blakester.
We're going to, let's see, when is Christmas this year? It's on what day?
It falls on the...
Wednesday, middle of the week, huh? The Christmas this year is on a Wednesday. So we'll be here. We'll be here 27. Yes, we'll be here 27. But we are going to, for the 20th, we are going to play a lot of Christmas music.
You remember my earlier comment, though.
And we're going to play the Grinch. We're going to play the Grinch. But we're going to play a lot of Christmas music on the 20th. And we can't say, how much more can we say about the shooting in Colorado again? Has this become outrageous?
And just to say, this is extremely tragic, and I'm very disappointed that our government failed in its duty after Newtown to pass any kind of meaningful legislation to address the issues. And that includes
this is a Republican term located, not just the, I'm not just talking about gun, you know, restriction or any other kind of thing like that, but they defeated also all the mental health care proposals that were made, all the bills to strengthen mental health care in America or to provide any kind of, you know, counseling networks or any of this type of stuff. They defeated all that. So it's a real disappointment, and here we go yet again on the anniversary having another shooting in America, and it's a very sad and troubling thing.
And so now what do you think the
ten thousand people
have died since
by gun violence in America.
By gun violence.
So that's 10,000 people that potentially could have been saved if we would have just a change of law.
We have it's just a disastrous outlook in Colorado. I'd like to know what the people, the representatives, who did not choose to run because they were being
hounded,
primaried, Democrats, because they wanted to change the laws, thinking right now.
Well, I also want to know what, you know, these Republicans.
Because I would think.
And now this is the second, you know.
But see, here's what I would have done. I would have welcomed the primary.
Right.
If I lost, I lost. But now I can come back and say, I told you so.
Yep.
Well, I guess they could say that anyway.
One of them was Senator Evie Hudak is one of them that resigned. That was a very difficult decision that she stepped aside rather than be recalled. But yeah, these things are.
Yeah, sure, I said primary. I meant recall.
Yeah, it was September. Democrats, Senator John Morse and Angela Giron were recalled in favor of Republican replacements over their support for gun control.
So now those Republican replacements are saying, yeah, well, we did it again.
Yeah, so they were high-fiving themselves over this, Arapaho High shooting or whatever.
Unbelievable.
What are they going to say now? Do they apologize? Do they say,
no, they'll apologize.
They're just going to keep on, you know, building more gun shops. I mean, what are they going to do in Colorado?
What should they do? I don't think these people have anything left to say. But we do, and we're going to go out of here with some Christmas music. This is the start. This is the start of the weekend of the big Christmas music.
Right.
So I want everybody to sit back.
And guess what?
And you're going to get snow. The East Coast is getting snow this weekend.
Right, but, you know, your friend the Pope, man of the year.
Absolutely correct.
I saw it on the cover of the magazine. He's the man.
Man of the year.
So will this be now a better year coming up?
Better year. Okay, those people who are out there in East Coast and I guess some places in Jersey are going to get some snow. So this is just for you from my guy, Frank.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. Lights are turned down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. Long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. is frightful, but that fire is delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Just show signs of stopping, and I brought lots of corn for popping. The lights are way down low, so let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally say goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll only hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbye. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow.
Merry Christmas.